This is Friday, February 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming your way, a United Nations panel has ruled in favor of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange.
We have today a really significant victory.
But is that really the case? We'll hear from VOA's Luis Ramirez about that. Turkey's prime minister says some 15,000 Syrians who are fleeing Syrian and Russian bombing in Aleppo are headed his way, but the border is closed. And you'll hear about what is the most technically advanced Super Bowl game ever. It takes place near San Francisco this Sunday. It's all ahead. The UN panel's finding that Julian Assange has been arbitrarily detained is a vindication, said the WikiLeaks founder Friday from the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where he has been living to avoid extradition. He spoke by video from inside the embassy. Assange says now is a matter of settled law that he has been wrongly detained. My colleague Sarah Williams spoke with VOA's Luis Ramirez in London about the Assange case.
This ruling is not legally binding, and immediately after it came down, both Sweden and Britain rejected it, saying that, well, Britain is saying that it is obliged to arrest Assange as soon as he comes out of the Ecuadorian embassy. Sweden says it will not impact its investigation on rape allegations into Mr. Assange.
So has Assange, he has signaled that he intends to leave the Ecuador embassy?
Assange has been making statements since Thursday, saying that all he wants to do is leave the Ecuadorian embassy a free man. He wants his Australian passport back. He wants the freedom to travel. And he notes that he has not been accused formally of any crime yet. He also said that he wants a termination of these investigations.
However, under the law, are British authorities, are they obligated to arrest him?
Britain has extradition treaties with Sweden, and under those treaties, it is definitely obliged to extradite him. Now, Assange, of course, has not been charged in Sweden. They simply want to ask him questions about an alleged rape that occurred in 2010.
Well, over the years, WikiLeaks has published hundreds of thousands of documents detailing U.S. military operations in Afghanistan and Iraq. Does Assange believe that the real reason for his prosecution is really political in nature?
Most definitely he does, and his supporters have been saying so on the WikiLeaks site and on the WikiLeaks Twitter account. They say that these charges of rape, or they're not even charges yet, these allegations of rape are trumped up. They quote the woman who's involved in the case as saying that the Swedish police railroaded her. That's the term she used, and in presenting any kind of accusation against Assange. What in his mind is really the issue here is the fact that he deeply angered U.S. officials and embarrassed them by making public these secret cables and secret files and videos.
VOA's Luis Ramirez speaking with my International Edition colleague, Sarah Williams. This is International Edition. Joining us, as he does every week, is VOA's and International Edition's social media guru, Andrew Palczewski, but he's not here in the studio. He has probably just decided just to stay home and sleep all day, but we just woke him up. So what's going on as far as social media is concerned?
Well, I'm on the road, actually, but no, so glad to be here with you, Ira. Well, Hillary and Bernie, this is the big trending story in U.S. politics today. Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders debating last night in New Hampshire, and there were a lot of key moments in the debate. Hillary Clinton calling Bernie Sanders' attacks on her artful sneers, Bernie Sanders saying that Hillary Clinton's getting all her money from Wall Street. But the thing that I found interesting was the tale of two social media stories. You look at Twitter, Hillary was the top discussed person on Twitter between the two of them. She had 56% of the conversation. He had about 44%. So, obviously, numbers she would have loved to win Iowa by, or any numbers that any politician would love, really. But on Google, Bernie Sanders was actually the top search person in 45 out of 50 states. So Hillary Clinton only got 5 of the states. Interestingly, though, one of those states was Iowa. So go figure. But so, the other big story coming up this weekend is, of course, the Super Bowl here in the U.S., which really is a global event. It takes place here in the U.S., but everybody around the world will be watching, including on social media. And the interesting thing that Twitter is doing this year for the Super Bowl is that they have Super Bowl emoji. So what Twitter is going to do is, for certain companies who spend at least $1 million on Twitter advertising during the Super Bowl, they're going to give them a special little emoji when you use their hashtag. And I have a couple examples here. Hashtag Bud Light Party. It'll show up with a small little Bud Light beer bottle cap. Hashtag Pepsi Halftime. Of course, Pepsi, the soda manufacturer, soda brand, is sponsoring the halftime show. You'll get a little Pepsi logo with some music notes coming out of it. We have hashtag Share a Coke, which has two little Coca-Cola bottles drinking. And one that I found very interesting, hashtag Make in India. Now, so this is not a company. This is actually the Indian government that is paying at least $1 million to sponsor a Twitter hashtag. It's going to get a little emoji encouraging people to manufacture in India. So it's not just these huge international brands. It's also huge international governments.
Thanks, Andrew. Enjoy your trip, and we'll talk to you next week.
Great. Thanks so much.
The spread of the Zika virus is getting more and more attention across the world. As we all know, the World Health Organization has really stepped up its investigation into it and attempts to get a vaccine to try to at least curtail it as it spreads around the world. Joining us here on International Edition is VOA health reporter Carol Pearson. And Carol, what's the latest as far as Zika is concerned?
Well, you mentioned a vaccine, Ira, but the vaccine is going to be years off. Dr. Anthony Fauci at the National Institutes of Health has a vaccine in the works that was has been through a phase one clinical trial with a related virus, the West Nile virus. However, they're now swapping out the West Nile portion of this vaccine to the Zika. They're putting Zika in there, and they're going to go into clinical trials by the end of this summer. So there was already work started on a virus in the same family. But it's going to be, you have to do a phase two clinical trial and then a phase three before it gets to people on the ground.
So what do you do in the meantime before these years it takes to be before you come up with some kind of solution to it as far as a vaccine is concerned?
In the meantime, scientists are trying to find out if Zika is actually related to the horrible birth defect that we're seeing in babies, particularly in Brazil, microcephaly, where you have small heads. And it's not scientifically proven that there is a relationship. Right now, where they're looking at that, they're trying to determine, is it Zika? Is this condition just a result of having contracted Zika? Is it Zika plus something else, like German measles or rubella? Is it something else entirely? So that's what they're trying to establish. In the meantime, governments are conducting aggressive mosquito control. The problem is this mosquito likes to live indoors. It likes to have clean water. And it can live in very, very tiny, can lay its eggs in really tiny bits of water in cisterns. People in Latin America frequently have water cisterns outside their homes, and it can breed in these cisterns.
Most of the focus, the geographic focus anyway, on Zika has centered on Brazil, Central and South America, but this thing's been around for a while in other places. Is that correct?
Yes, it was first discovered in 1947 in Uganda. So it's been in Africa for decades and decades. It was also found its way to Southeast Asia, where it's also been for decades and decades. And there are similar viruses in these regions. So the people there may have built up some sort of immunity. Then what the virus did, it went from Southeast Asia, it hopped across the Pacific, and then went into Brazil, where the people had never seen this kind of virus. And so it was a novel virus. There was no built-up immunity in anyone, and that may be what's causing people to get Zika. That said, 80% of people who get this disease don't know they have it. It's not enough to get them to seek medical care.
So why only now does it become, at the behest of the World Health Organization, a major, major problem when it hasn't been seen as that before?
Well, the virus itself is inconsequential. What has caused it to become a major problem is the large numbers of suspected cases of microcephaly in Brazil.
Which is the birth defect. Right?
Yes, the babies with the small heads. Microcephaly means small head, but what it what the effect is that the brain has stopped developing somewhere along the pregnancy. So they suspect the worst cases, it's a spectrum. The worst cases of these fetuses, the brain stopped developing in the first trimester. That's when most of the brain growth happens. But they're also studying that. So there are lots and lots of unknowns about this virus, plus the fact that Zika might not even cause this birth defect.
Seems like there are a lot of questions still there. Carol Pearson, VOA's health correspondent, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
You're welcome.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
California scientists have found that people who frequently check their Facebook pages may not be doing so because they enjoy the interactivity of social media, but because they may not be getting enough sleep. After analyzing data collected from 76 undergraduate students, researchers from the University of California, Irvine, say that they found a direct link between chronic lack of sleep, a bad mood, and an increased dependence on checking out Facebook pages. The study also showed a link between sleep deprivation and being distracted. According to the study's lead researcher, Gloria Mark, if someone is distracted, they often go online and check their Facebook page because it's easy and they're tired. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has called sleep deprivation a public health epidemic. Lack of sleep has been linked to potentially life-threatening incidents like car and industrial accidents. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
NATO chief Jens Stoltenberg says Russia's airstrikes in Syria are undermining the efforts to find a non-military solution to the conflict.
What you have seen is that the intense Russian airstrikes, mainly targeting opposition groups in Syria, is undermining the efforts to find a political solution to the conflict.
Stoltenberg made the comment Friday as he arrived in Amsterdam for a meeting of European Union defense ministers. In recent days, the Syrian army and its allies have also made significant advances against rebels in the northern province of Aleppo. Meanwhile, Turkey's Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu said Friday that up to 70,000 people were headed toward his country to escape a Russian-backed offensive led by government troops around Aleppo. Let us welcome Jamie Detmer. Jamie, I don't even know where you are. Where are you?
I'm in Istanbul at the moment, heading back down to the border at the crack of dawn tomorrow.
All right, and what is that situation as far as what the Turkish leader has said?
Well, we're going into, I think, a very new phase of this war, one that will be looked back as possibly a defining one. Because of this intense aerial campaign by the Russians, a ground offensive by Syrian forces backed by Iranian Revolutionary Guardsmen and Lebanese fighters from the Shia movement, Hezbollah, we're seeing a tremendous exodus, and probably the biggest exodus of refugees we've seen in more than a year, from around the Aleppo area. What has really happened is that the government has managed probably now to encircle the opposition-held areas in Aleppo, cutting the main supply line for them to Turkey. And because of this intense fighting, both probably about approximately 15,000 refugees from Aleppo City itself, according to the UN, and then a further, well, the estimates range from, as you said earlier, Turkish Prime Minister saying 70,000 in all, Syrian observatories saying 40,000. We do know there are tens of thousands of people heading from the rural areas around Aleppo, from Aleppo City, to the Turkish border, but they're not being allowed in. The Turkish authorities have closed that border for many months. They won't allow most civilians in unless they need medical attention. We've had about 10 to 20,000 already there before this offensive who have been held on the Syrian side of the border in tent cities along there. So we will have approximately maybe up to 100,000 Syrian civilians on the Syrian side of the border hoping to get into Turkey within the next few days.
That is VOA's Jamie Detmer reporting to us from Istanbul. Watch for that story. It's going to be bigger and bigger as the day goes on. Well, let's turn our attention to the economy. Markets are generally down in early trading today. At least they had been, my last check anyway, by the end of the week of volatility. The latest jobs report from the U.S. government shows unemployment declining, but the markets don't seem impressed. Here to sort it all out for us, hopefully, is our markets reporter, Jill Malandrino, who's keeping an eye on Wall Street from our bureau in New York. Jill, welcome. What's going on?
So what's happening is, and yes, equities are in negative territory and have been steadily declining throughout the morning. The issue is with the jobs report is it's lending more uncertainty into the macro environment. If there's one thing markets don't like, it is uncertainty, because even though they took up rates in December, the question becomes, will we see other rate hikes? Or because the markets are responding so poorly on a global basis, will we actually see a decrease? No one has any idea, and that's why the markets have been so volatile. So the report this morning, it came in weaker on the headline number, but the unemployment rate slipped to 4.9% as more participants entered the workforce, while wages jumped 0.5%. So the mixed reading proves another conundrum for the Fed, because it lends to more uncertainty. Right now, the macro data globally is just not that good, and taking the rates up in December, along with other global central banks either devaluing their currency or bringing their interest rates to a negative environment like Japan had, it's just adding more uncertainty into the system. And I think this even supersedes what's happening in the crude oil markets.
Well, is this more uncertainty than we have seen in the past, or is there precedent for this type of situation?
We could look at precedent going into the financial crisis in 2007, 2008. And a lot of market pundits will suggest that it's been due to the weakness of oil. But if you take a look at the way the S&P performed relative to the top in oil in 2014, you can see the divergence where oil plummeted and the market actually had a pretty stunning rise. It's only very recent that we've seen oil and the S&P trade in lockstep.
Well, Jill, I thank you so much for being with us, and we'll be speaking with you every week. And welcome aboard. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Ira. Thank you.
That is Jill Malandrino reporting to us from the VOA New York Bureau. Well, let's shift our attention to sports, where on Sunday, American-style football celebrates the 50th anniversary of its championship game, the Super Bowl. Fans attending the very first Super Bowl in 1967 likely could not imagine the high-tech experience in store for this year in Santa Clara, California. International Business Times media and culture reporter Max Willand spoke with my colleague Jim Stevenson about what's special at the new Levi's Stadium.
Every time an NFL team looks to build a new stadium, they have this mandate to build a stadium that's bigger and shinier and more impressive than the ones that came before it. When the San Francisco 49ers, who built Levi's Stadium, which is where the game will be played, they thought that rather than focus on building more luxury boxes or building bigger, shinier, snazzier video monitors to show instant replay on, they wanted the thing that was going to make their stadium stand out be internet connectivity and cell phone capability. That's exactly what they've done. Levi's Stadium has more Wi-Fi capacity than any other NFL stadium and really any other stadium in the United States. All that extra bandwidth has really made it possible for them to play around with the kinds of experiences that you have while you're at the stadium. Specifically, in this case, we're talking about an app that the people that are attending the game can use. And the app, really, if you're using it to its fullest, really can kind of change the way that people think about attending an NFL game. You can order a drink that will be brought right to your seat. You can order merch that you can pick up on your way out of the stadium. You can watch instant replay after every single play. You can even watch, during the stoppages, you can watch the Super Bowl commercials that everyone talks about so much while you're sitting there in your seat.
That's a big deal, because I've been to a few Super Bowls, and I'll tell you, I had to videotape them and go back and watch, because I had no clue what was going on during the telecast, and I knew everybody was going to be talking about the commercials, of course. I've also been in stadiums where it's very difficult just to make a phone call. This is a big deal.
It's a huge deal. In 2014, when the Super Bowl was held at MetLife Stadium outside of New York City, more than 2.5 terabytes of cellular data passed through the stadium on Super Bowl Sunday. That's a ton of data, obviously, but there are projections that this year at Levi's Stadium, they're talking about a number north of 16 terabytes. It's just an incredible amount of data that they're going to have to provide.
These stadiums really are not used a lot during the year. There's a limited amount of time that they have with all the people in to make the most of those people being there in terms of selling beverages and merchandise and that sort of thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting. You think of NFL stadiums as being these impressive, potentially very useful, money-generating fixtures in a landscape, but they're actually almost the opposite. I mean, Levi's Stadium, for example, in 2015, it only played host to 20 events, and 10 of those were NFL games. That's 8 regular season and 2 preseason. And it's just very difficult to find use for a building that holds 60, 70, 80, 90,000 people. And because they're so expensive, you know, often costing north of $1 billion or even $2 billion, it's really very important for the owners to figure out not only how to maximize on the people that do walk through the turnstiles, but also just to figure out what they can do to make sure that those people want to come back.
It seems appropriate that all of this is happening in the heart of Silicon Valley.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot that you can focus on when you're talking about the connectivity, but there's all kinds of other interesting bells and whistles inside and around Levi's Stadium. They have electric car charging stations. There's vegetation on the roof of the suites designed to regulate the climate inside. There are solar panels on the roof and a ton of other little bells and whistles. It's not an accident that a stadium like this was built right in the heart of Silicon Valley.
Well, it's great that we had the chance to have connectivity with you. Max Willens, writing for International Business Times. And check out his article online, Why the Super Bowl 2016 App and High-Tech Levi's Stadium Are the Future for the NFL Fans. Thanks so much for joining us, Max.
Thank you.
And that is our program for today. Thank you for being with us. Please visit our website, and that is voanews.com, where you can keep up on everything happening around the world any time of the day or night. I'm Ira Melman. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States condemns the Boko Haram terrorist attacks on January 29th and 30th in northeast Nigeria. On January 30th, in the village of Dolori, the terrorist bombed a market, attacked a village, and firebombed huts. Boko Haram militants set fire to as many as 300 homes in the village, burning alive some people who were inside, including children. According to Nigeria's National Emergency Management Agency, at least 65 people were killed and 136 injured. Boko Haram, which in March 2015 pledged its allegiance to the Islamic State, has been attacking northern Nigeria for years. According to press reports, Boko Haram's insurgency has killed 20,000 people in the last 6 years and driven at least 2.3 million from their homes. Boko Haram continues to commit vicious attacks against the innocent, including children. This terrorist organization repeatedly has shown no regard for human life. We extend our deepest condolences to the families of the latest victims of Boko Haram. The United States will continue to support those affected by Boko Haram's violence through ongoing humanitarian aid and support services. In response to the threat posed by Boko Haram, President Barack Obama announced in October 2015 that the United States would send 300 U.S. troops, along with surveillance drones, to Cameroon to bolster a West African effort to counter the militant Islamist group. U.S. troops were tasked with conducting airborne intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance operations in the region. In a statement issued on February 2nd, State Department spokesperson John Kirby said the United States remains committed to supporting Nigeria and its Lake Chad Basin partners in the fight against terrorism.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237 USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.